Good morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. We welcome you no matter where you are on the religious or faith or spiritual or sacred journey, whichever word you prefer, or insert your own word. We welcome you no matter the color of your skin, your ethnicity, your family structure, your gender identification. You are welcome here. I always encourage people to come to more than one service if this is one of your first, because our services are different every Sunday morning. Sometimes I do them. I'm the minister here, Sandy Ingham. Sometimes people from within the congregation do the service, and sometimes we have outside speakers. The opening words this morning are these. They're by Wendell Berry. It is the destruction of the world in our own lives that drives us half insane, and more than half, to destroy that which we were given in trust. How will we bear it? Penny, would you light the chalice? Thank you. To face the world's coldness, a chalice of warmth. To face the world's terrors, a chalice of courage. To face the world's turmoils, a chalice of peace. May its glow fill our spirits, our hearts, and our lives. This first reading I would like to share with you was written by Joanna Macy. You know I love to use Joanna Macy. But the important thing here, there were many important things here, but she's writing this in 1991. We are bombarded by signals of distress, ecological destruction, social breakdown, and uncontrolled nuclear proliferation. Not surprisingly, we are feeling despair. A despair well merited by the machinery of mass death that we continue to create and serve. What is surprising is the extent to which we continue to hide this despair from ourselves and each other. The cause of our apathy is not mere indifference. It stems from a fear of confronting the despair. The refusal to feel the psychic numbing impedes our capacity to process and respond to information. Despair work, the willingness to acknowledge, feel, and express inner pain in an attempt to come to terms with apocalyptic anxieties in ways that are integrative and liberating, opening awareness not only to planetary distress, but also to the hope inherent in our own capacity to change. And I should tell you what Macy's definition of despair is: the loss of the assumption that the species will inevitably pull through. And then this from Thomas Berry, priest, writer, social justice activist. This was written in 1999, so we have bookends here, the decade of the 90s, and Thomas Berry and Wendell Berry are not related. Thomas Berry writes, throughout the 20th century, the situation has worsened decade by decade, with relentless commitment to making profit by ruining the planet for the uncertain benefit of the human. The great corporations have joined together so that a few establishments now control vast regions of the earth. Perhaps the most valuable heritage we can provide for future generations is some sense of the great work, capital G, capital W, some sense of the great work that is before them of moving the human project from its devastating exploitation to a benign presence. The great work before us is this task of moving modern industrial civilization from its present devastating influence on the earth to a more benign mode of presence. And then lastly, this poem from Anita Barrows, which was quoted in Joanna Macy and Molly Young Brown's book, Coming Back to Life. And I would travel with you to the places of our shame, the hills stripped of trees, the marsh grasses oil slicked, steeped in sewage, the blackened shoreline, the chemical poisoned water. I would stand with you in the desolate places, the charred places, and where nothing will ever grow, pitted desert, fields that burn slowly for months, roots of chola and chaparral writhing with underground explosions. I would put my hand there with yours. I would take your hand. I would walk with you through carefully planted fields, rows of leafy vegetables drifting with radioactive dust, through the dark of uranium mines hidden in the sacred gold-red mountains. I would listen with you in drafty hospital corridors as the miner cried out in the first language of pain, as he cried out the forgotten names of his mother. I would stand next to you in the forest's final hour, in the wind of helicopter blades, police sirens shrieking, the delicate tremor of light between leaves for the last time. Oh, I would touch with this love each on each wounded place. Okay. Amber, it's a good thing you play cheery music, huh? I would stand with you in the desolate places, the charred places, writes Anita Barrows. I would stand next to you in the forest's final hour. I would touch with this love each wounded place. Barrows takes us into despair with most of those words, but leaves us with ways out of that despair. I would travel with you in the places of our shame. I would stand with you. I would touch with this love each wounded place. We are not alone in our despair. We have each other. Despite our reluctance to admit this to each other, both our reluctance to name desire and our reluctance to admit it to each other, we have love, though we generally greatly underestimate its power. These are tools that will help us out of despair. Just like Holly Bloom in the children's story, we have to keep looking for the right tools. Community is one, love is another. In mid-July, I talked about despair and gave you a homework assignment of sorts. I asked you to intentionally sit with despair and sorrow and pain, not your personal sorrow, despair, and pain, although that generally comes up when we're talking about those things in general, but sit with them for a while, silently. Just sit and wait with that. I purposely did not have a congregational response time during that service in July. I do want to hear your thoughts about despair. And by the way, I'm referring to communal despair mostly. The despair over the fragile state of our world. The despair over how we mistreat Mother Earth. There are times when we might want to ponder our responses to a speaker and not give immediate feedback. This seems to me to be especially true when we are talking about intense subjects such as despair that demand our complete attention at least once in a while and also require our getting in touch with our feelings. So today is the day that I will invite you to talk about how to get through times of despair. How do we come out of despair after acknowledging its existence and contemplating its consequences? As I said in July, by not naming despair, by letting it be the elephant in the living room, we stifle discussion. But worse, we stifle creativity and ideas for long-term resolution of our huge problems. It is actually okay to suffer a little. I'm not talking about physical suffering here. To sit for a while with sorrow without expecting quick, immediate resolution to problems, to the feelings of terror and fear. It is okay, even necessary, to be still and to give creativity a chance to blossom. I also talked then about something called positive disintegration. Some of you might remember that I used that phrase. We humans are pretty tough. We really are. We're not going to fall asleep. Well, that too. We're not going to fall apart or asleep if we allow ourselves to disintegrate a little. By opening ourselves up to our feelings and admitting that we do despair for the earth, that we are sometimes terrified, we break down old defenses and make way for the release of new energy, new ideas, more creativity, validating our despair because it is real and it is important. Validation of despair is another means of working through it. So I guess you might say that the first step in our coming out of despair is to enter into it. Here we need to remember two things. One, we do not have to come up with the answers to all or any of the huge problems confronting us here in the 21st century all at once or immediately. Two, I am not necessarily talking about hope here. When working our way out of despair, it is best not to be overly hopeful too soon, because that can be another form of denial. Joanna Macy recalls a conversation she had with Jim Douglas. I don't know if any of you will remember that name from the 80s and 90s. A theologian, a writer, a man jailed many times for civil disobedience. She asked Douglas this question. What do you substitute for hope? He looked at me and smiled, Macy says. Possibilities, he said. Possibilities. You can't predict, just make space for them. There are so many. This is a form of active waiting. And William Lynch tells us the ability to wait is central to hope. Also, there's another tool for despair work, waiting, listening for that voice that's still small, deep inside all voice to suggest ways to restore harmony in a broken world. Macy calls her despair work, Macy has a whole bunch of workshops and exercises and practices to help us in this work. She prefers to call this work, work that reconnects. You might ask, to what are we being reconnected? Well, to the interdependent web, of course, but also to that still small voice within us, to our hearts, which know what we need in this world, even though we are so easily distracted. And always, always, work that reconnects must reconnect us to each other. I like to think of the work that reconnects us as work based on the four C's: commitment, community, courage, and compassion. The problems that we humans face are daunting. They overwhelm us. What to choose as top priority? Where to begin? Is there a connection among all the choices. Global warming, gun violence, ISIS, poverty, nuclear weapons, and other WMDs, to rattle off just a few. For me and for many others, the connection is Mother Earth. Learning to live in harmony with the Earth is the basis for solving all of our other problems. Change the story, change the future, as David Corton says in his book by that name. Change the human story from the current false one of sacred money and markets to the true human story of sacred life and living Earth. Life is sacred, money's just a number. Where better to lay the groundwork and plant the seeds for this kind of work than right here at Prairie, in an atmosphere where I hope we all feel safe and secure enough to name our despair, to break down our defenses, to brainstorm, to engage in the healing work of the world. A few weeks ago, Beth Jared? Where's Penny? Jared.
Yeah.
Beth Jared presented a service about Mondragon, Spain, a town in Spain where graduates of a local technical college founded something called the Mondragon Corporation. It was founded in 1956, and by the end of the year 2013, this worker cooperative employed over 74,000 people in 257 companies and organizations in the fields of finance, industry, retail, and education. In the response time after Beth's remarks, one of you said, "We are so far from that in this country. How will we ever get anywhere near building this kind of community in this culture?" Well, it does seem an almost impossible task that we might transform this country from what Thomas Berry described in that reading I did earlier, moving modern industrial civilization from its present devastating influence on the earth to a more benign mode of being. What many are now calling the Great Turning. But change starts here and in other faith communities and in similar grassroots organizations. Moses comes to mind. I told you a little bit about Moses during the announcements, and you'll have a chance to donate to Moses in a little bit. Change, even that great change, the great turning, the great work, it's been called all of these things, that we have to do, or I believe we'll perish, we humans, that is. Change starts by the efforts of people who come together in places like this. I'm not sure that we ever do or can come completely out of despair, and I'm not sure that it would be a good thing to do that. Yet I wouldn't mind having a little less of it, despair that is, from time to time. A recent image that touched me deeply and took me into a despair where I didn't want to go were the pictures of the Animas River going through Durango, Colorado. When I was trying to decide where to live in the Southwest and ended up in Flagstaff, Durango was one of my choices. And I've walked beside that river in Durango so many times. I want to replace that image. I want to replace it with one of clean rivers moving through our country. I believe that anything that humans can imagine, humans can make happen, for good or for evil. To accomplish the great turning, we need more bodhisattvas. You all know what a bodhisattva is? All right. This is the Buddhist term for, or the Buddhist word for the embodiment of compassion. Maybe we should be doing some bodhisattva training here. And I want you to know, I've told you this before, but I'd like to remind you that I am a certified honest-to-goodness bodhisattva, certified by the Dalai Lama himself at a workshop here in Madison. So if I can do it, anyone can do it, right? However, I am a very long way from realizing my potential in this area. I want to be a better bodhisattva. I would also like to be a Shambhala warrior. You might not know what that is, but here's another tool to help us come out of despair. Rediscovering, remembering, drawing upon the wisdom of the ages, telling the stories from the ancient traditions is in this toolbox. Here is a modern day version of an ancient Tibetan story, the Shambhala prophecy. There came a time when all life on earth was in danger. Great barbarian powers have arisen. Although these powers spend their wealth in preparations to annihilate one another, they have much in common. Weapons of unfathomable destructive power and technologies that lay waste our world. In this era, when the future of sentient life hangs by the frailest of threads, the kingdom of Shambhala emerges. You cannot go there, though, for it is not a place. It is not a geopolitical entity. It exists in the hearts and the minds of the Shambhala warriors. Nor can you recognize a Shambhala warrior when you see her or him, for they wear no uniforms or insignia, and they carry no banners. They have no barricades on which to climb to threaten the enemy, or behind which they can hide to rest or regroup. They do not even have any home turf. Always, they must move on the terrain of the barbarians themselves. And now the time comes when great courage, moral and physical courage, is required of the Shambhala warriors, for they must go into the very heart of the barbarian power, into the pits and pockets and citadels where the weapons are kept, to dismantle them, to dismantle weapons in every sense of the word. They must go into the corridors of power where decisions are made. The Shambhala warriors have the courage to do this because they know that these weapons are mano maya. They are mind made. Made by the human mind, they can be unmade by the human mind. The Shambhala warriors know that the dangers threatening life on earth are not visited upon us by any extraterrestrial power, satanic deities, or preordained evil fate. They arise from our own decisions, our own lifestyles, and our own relationships. So the Shambhala warriors go into training. How do they train, you might ask? Well, they train in the use of two weapons. What weapons? The weapons are compassion and insight. Both are necessary. You have to have compassion because it gives you the juice, the power, the passion to move. It means not to be afraid of the pain of the world. Then you can open to it, step forward into it, and act. But that weapon, that by itself is not enough. It can burn you out. So you need the other. You need insight into the radical interdependence of all phenomena. With that wisdom, you know that it is not a battle between good guys and bad guys, because the line between good and evil runs through the landscape of every human heart. With insight into our profound interrelatedness, you know that actions undertaken with pure intent have repercussions throughout the web of life. By itself, that insight may appear too cool, too conceptual, too up here, too in the head, to sustain you and keep you moving. So you need the heat of compassion in your heart. And together, these two sustain us as agents of wholesome change. They are gifts for us to claim now in the healing of the world. There are practices, exercises, workshops, designed by Joanna Macy, Molly Young, Brown, many, many others, that are designed to turn us into Shambhala warriors. They are designed to help us come back to life, come out of despair. I'd like to work on some of these here in this community. So let me know if there's any interest in that. I think that we need a support group here for those grappling with positive disintegration. Or maybe Prairie Unitarian Universal Society could become the fellowship of the bigger picture, or the church of the larger vision. Every day I look for signs that the great turning has begun. I look for signs of the great work in progress. I look for anything that even remotely appears to be an acknowledgement of the larger picture in the human story, any glimpse of decisions being made with the greater good in mind. Alas, often, too often, I do end up feeling despair for our world when it seems that we are only going backwards. The sources that I drew on for today are already 15 to 20 years old. I think that we cannot overestimate how much 9/11 set us back. Here's a perfect example of the short-sightedness of humans, at least humans in this country. Gasoline prices. You know they're going to go up again, and yet, when they fall as low as they have been lately, unless you live here, I know, people react as if the prices are going to be permanently low, and that there's an infinite supply of oil. And then they grumble when they go back up. Occasionally, though, I feel, if not hope, then at least possibility. And here is an example of courage, commitment, community, compassion, in keeping with the C words, the Carter Center. I was moved to tears a few days ago when I heard Jimmy Carter tell us so frankly and so honestly about his cancer. Carter talked about gratitude for his life, reminding me that gratitude for our precious lives is another tool for us to use when we are mired in despair and ready to come out of it. But here's the part that made me really teary-eyed. When asked what he would like to do, like to see accomplished before he dies, he said, "I want the last guinea worm to die before I die." Those of you who know about the Carter Center know that it has been trying to eradicate that particular parasite. Time actually is of the essence here. I know that earlier in these reflections I said that we don't have to do anything immediately, but I'd like to qualify that now. We are running out of time to make the necessary corrections and turnings, the necessary shifts in how we live. But we have the tools. We have the tools to make those changes and to help bring about the great turning. We live in an amazing time. We have destroyed and continue to destroy the very structures of life that this planet depends on. Our ways of relating to other than human modes of being have created a disharmony that Mother Earth is finding more and more difficult to self-correct and to heal. Back in April and May, I did a couple of services based on David Corton's book, Change the Story, Change the Future. And after one of those services, one of you suggested to me that we have a panel discussion some Sunday morning about what we are doing as individuals out there in the larger community to further the process of changing this humanity's story from destructiveness to living in harmony with the earth. Well, we can begin that discussion right now in our congregational response time. We made a kind of beginning along those lines the first Sunday in August when Dean Hinman talked about choices and invited you to share moments or stories when you witness someone choosing, and it could have been yourself, as he put it, a world that's all about me, a world about love, or we made the other choice or witnessed someone making the other choice, choosing a world of fear, a world all about me. I thought that one of the best comments that came out of that discussion was this one, and I don't necessarily have it exactly right. Remember that the me is part of the we. What I would like you to do now is ratchet that discussion up a little bit and tell about the same sort of choices, but not necessarily individual encounters. Rather, tell us about community choices, communal stories that you've either been involved in personally, or that you've witnessed or read about or heard about, anything related to the great work, the great turning, anything related to humanity turning away from destruction of the earth and toward living harmoniously with it. Here's an example. The astronauts, when the first ones went into space and looked down on Earth and saw that beautiful, small planet, There's a beautiful picture of that from outer space that any of you who worked in the grassroots movement Beyond War know about that poster. The blue marble, exactly. And we use that poster all the time in Beyond War, and other organizations have used it also. To come out of despair work, we need to stop thinking that feeling grief for our world is morbid. And then we need to allow ourselves to feel. A wide variety of things to think about, and some very good comments. You know that old saying about we come here to afflict the comfortable, comfort the afflicted. Maybe we've done a little of that today. Closing words are from the Buddha. Go forth on your journey for the benefit of the many, for the joy of the many, out of compassion for the welfare, the benefit and joy of all beings. Blessed be, go in peace. Greet your neighbor.